Welcome to iRun Radio. Coming up, running every single day for almost 40 years.
When I think about it, and I try not to, I'm almost in disbelief. But, I'm blessed and very fortunate that I can run every day as slow as I'm running now. And it is a big milestone.
Don't tell me what to wear.
If you have a leader saying to a bunch of men, you know, yeah, it is distracting when the runners are in sports bras. You know, I think that's the culture that needs to change.
And finding the finish line in Frankfurt.
I certainly would recommend it. It was a really great experience in terms of kind of a very easy, I think, marathon to kind of jump into and run. It was an extremely flat course, as I mentioned, and really well supported along the course, which is really nice.
On this edition of iRun Radio, we'll talk to Toronto's Rick Raymond, who has run every single day since December 1978. We'll get a review of the Frankfurt Marathon, and elite runner Sasha Gaulish will join us to talk about her reaction to a story in the U.S. about a college telling female runners what they should wear while they're training. Yes, that actually happened. All right, let's get things started now with the editor and general manager of iRun, Ben Kaplan. Hello, Ben.
Hey there.
How's your week been?
Everything is great. Thanks for asking.
It's been cold in Ottawa, I can tell you that. It's been minus 15, minus 20 on some days in the morning. So, yeah, it feels like January, not November.
You're back on your treadmill, eh?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm still doing some running outside sometimes, but, you know, I have to admit the temptation is too great to resist of running in my 21-degree basement and watching a little bit of television while I'm running in a t-shirt and shorts instead of bundling up to go outside, although I still do go outside for a few runs every week, for sure.
This was the first week in Toronto where it was a sort of cold, where gloves don't yet exist to keep your hands warm against these frigid temperatures, you know?
That's the first thing that goes for me is the fingers, you know? I can feel toasty everywhere, but my hands are the first thing to feel the cold, for sure.
It's just a miserable experience.
Yeah. But, I was driving in the car today and thinking, yeah, I feel pretty good about the investment I made in a treadmill about a year ago.
Yeah,
it's working out.
I want to get one.
It's not one of those things where I'm saying, man, I didn't end up using that thing. You know?
Yeah.
It's worked out pretty well. Hey, we have Sasha Gaulish on the show today, and I know you and she have been talking quite a lot about this whole issue that came up in the United States at this university where they told the women to cover up because they were too distracting, the women who were training on the track near the football team.
Yeah, the football team couldn't concentrate because the runners in their sports bras were just driving them to distraction. So she has been very outspoken, and she's been writing about it online, and she's actually taken it a bit further in the issue that we're working now, and she is just the best. Yeah, she's a terrific women's advocate.
Absolutely. She's got a great perspective on that, and she shared it at irun.ca, and she'll share it on the show today. And you are working on a women's issue of iRun, right?
Yeah, that's right. The whole, basically the whole magazine this time is dedicated to and about women. And we have a beautiful gatefold of all these incredible women runners. And they're not, you know, they're not Olympians. They're just a women's running group. And they love to run together and support each other and just have fun with the sport. And it's just been fantastic.
Yeah, and I know you love meeting all these runners, that you go to the photo shoots when we pull together this cross-section of runners from different backgrounds, people who are doing amazing things, and we pull them all together and we do a shoot, and you get to know them a little bit, and you're inspired by them, and you're always telling me about them. And in the coming weeks, we're going to talk to a couple of people you met recently, including this guy Earl Fee, who is... he's either just about to turn 90 or he just turned 90, and he's a track and field competitor, right?
He's unbelievable, but I just want to backtrack one step if we could, because going back to that women's issue, one of the things that we have and what I've been doing, like talking about how much I enjoy this process, is making the magazine. We've been doing various little call outs on social media for people just to share their photographs, you know, show us your support team, show us you who watched the kids when you go out run, or show us you and your family reuniting after the race, and, you know, show us what it means to you and how the kids stay in the picture when you participate in your sport. And so I'm getting these emails every day of just the most heart-rending photos you've ever. It's just so delightful. They're just like these little, like, warm muffins that I'm given every 2.5 hours, you know? It's just, it's terrific.
Warm muffins.
I don't, you know, what's just a thing that you like that makes you feel good, you know?
It's yeah.
Just, I got this, you know, it's just this, and they have stories, and it's just, you know, you just, because you always say this, you're seeing people at their best, you know? So it's like, here's somebody super happy, like, then hugging their kid and, like, sending that picture to me, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's
yeah, and
so
you,
good.
You really do see people at their best with this sport. There's no question about that. And
yeah,
and so I think we're going to have this guy Earl on the on next week's show, and on today's show we're going to talk some more with Rick Raymond, who is approaching this huge milestone. In a few weeks, it will be 40 years that he has been running every single day, hasn't missed
yeah.
a day of running in 40 years, just
yeah.
since December 1978. So you know, an incredible record for him. He's not, you know, he's still doing marathons. He's not showing any signs of letting up anytime soon.
I don't, you know, you see him run. It doesn't, he's a tough guy. I don't know how, you know, we'll see. I don't know. You think he's got another 20 years in him running
I don't know.
Every day?
I wouldn't bet against it. It's been 40 already, and he's determined. You know, when you talk about the people who are ahead of him on the list of longest running streaks, he wants
yeah.
to knock those guys down, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So,
he is.
He's committed.
He's unbelievable.
Yeah. All right. Good stuff,
yeah.
Ben. Good luck
Appreciate
with this latest issue of the magazine, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, my friend.
That's Ben Kaplan, iRun's editor and general manager. Coming up next, an incredible milestone approaches for a Toronto runner. iRun Radio is brought to you in part by New Balance Canada. New Balance is a proud sponsor of the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon, fitting elite Olympic marathoners like Reed Coolset, and also making shoes that are ideal for you. On December 10th, 1978, a Toronto dentist named Rick Raymond went for a run, and he has run every single day since then, a streak that is approaching 40 years. Rick, it's great to welcome you back to iRun Radio.
And it's always fun and a pleasure to talk with you, Mark.
And we have talked so many times about how long you have been running, how many days in a row you have been running, how many marathons you have done, and the numbers are always staggering. But look, this is really special. This milestone you have approaching in early December is quite remarkable. It will be 40 years of running every single day. Congratulations on that.
Well, thank you. It's sort of jinxing me because I haven't done it yet. I still have got, you know, a few days to run, but again, thank you. And when I think about it, and I try not to, I'm almost in disbelief. But you know, I'm blessed and very fortunate that I can run every day as slow as I'm running now. But you know, thank you. And it is a big milestone.
Yeah, and look, you have it's almost like you are in the final few hundred meters of a marathon right now, right? Because you're not there yet, but
exactly.
But you're almost there, and you know it's going to happen. So so you're approaching this major milepost in your life and in your running career, and you can start relishing it and enjoying it and celebrating it because it's almost here.
I totally agree, and it's funny when you said final 200 meters. At Scotiabank a couple of weeks ago, which I love that marathon, when I finished, my wife and a few people from the STWM were standing with her, and they all said, "I looked so great when I finished." But have you run Scotia? You must have.
Yes,
run
I have. Yeah, I did it last year. Yeah.
Exactly. So when you turn that corner up on Bay, you see 500 meters to go, 400, yep. 300, 200. And I was walking a lot because obviously my marathon times are a lot slower now. And I said to myself, I'm going to start running at 500 meters. Then I said no. And I only ran the last 100 meters. That's why I looked so good when I finished.
Well, that's okay. You still finished. And that's,
yeah, exactly.
That's what matters.
But I looked
yeah.
good because I was walking up that hill until we turned around City Hall.
Yeah. So it was December the 10th, 1978, right?
Right.
Tell me about that day and what
it's an
you
interesting
know.
Day.
Yeah.
And we probably talked about this, but I'm director of student life at the Faculty of Dentistry at U of T, and I keep telling my students how important family is, and family's number one in my life. But we were coming back, our two kids and Marcia and I, from a two-week holiday in Miami, which Marcia and I still go to every year, and I'll be running the Miami Marathon January 27th. But we got home on December the 10th, and I was so, I guess you could say, depressed, and I hate using that word, that I wouldn't be with my family as much as we were the last 2 weeks. They were going to school, I was going to work, that I didn't run that day. And that's the only reason I didn't run that day.
And the next day, you started the streak?
I ran, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
And I have all these diaries that I keep track of how far I ran, what time, and what the weather was. And on that day, I just put a little line through it. I didn't run.
Okay. And the day that you did run, do you remember that run? When,
yeah.
The first day of the streak?
Yeah. I've got it documented. It was just a five mile run. Back then, I would go by distance. Now, I only go by time.
Okay, so 5 miles, about 8K, and every day since then for 40 years, almost 40 years, you've been running.
Almost.
And
yeah.
And so will you do anything special to mark the anniversary this year?
Well, it's really neat, and I'm not sure if I told you. I told Ben, and there is an international streak list, and I'm number two on that. There's a gentleman, a runner from South Africa, who's number one, and he's about a year ahead of me, but he's 82 years old, so all being well, I'll pass him. But on the U.S. list, and there's no Canadian on the U.S. list, they only have Americans, the number three runner, Steve DeBoer, he's around 47 years. He's from Minnesota, and him and his wife are coming up to our place to Toronto, and they're going to spend the weekend with us, that weekend, December 8th, 9th, and 10th, and he's going to run with me on December the 10th. So that's a real treat.
Wow, that's so special. You're going to run with another runner who has been running every single day for more than 40 years on the day that you hit 40 years.
Yeah, and he is, like I said, number three in the world.
Right.
John Sutherland and one other guy is ahead of him. But he's a real, we've been, you know, communicating for a long time, and he's only 63, and I say that because most streak runners are a lot older, and he's an accomplished runner. He just ran a 50-minute 10K, and Marcia
wow.
gets angry at me when I say this, but he's only run 65 marathons, so I'm 300 ahead of him.
Right. So how many marathons is it now for you?
Scotiabank was 365.
365. So you have run a marathon for every day of a calendar year, basically.
And that's why I did that for Scotiabank.
Okay.
Because that, like I said, is
yeah.
my favorite, 26.2 miles.
Yeah. And so when you run on December the 10th, 2018, and you mark the 40th anniversary of that first run that started the streak in 1978. You'll actually be the second. You won't even be the guy with the longest streak in that run that day, because the guy who's joining you has gone.
You can't come to Toronto. You could run with us.
That's true. And then at least you'd be in the middle, as opposed to being the guy with the shortest streak out of the two.
Well,
yeah, that's just a funny little twist. But
you got a good point.
Yeah, and look, we should mention your wife Marcia, because she has. I don't think I've ever seen you at a running event without your wife, and she's gone to so many of them. You're running many marathons every year and traveling to do so, and she goes with you to almost all of them, doesn't she?
Yeah, and again, we make little holidays out of it. And Marcia's there pretty well at every, you know, finish line that I have ever completed a marathon. She doesn't come to the finish line at Miami. I don't know why. I have to convince her to do it. But every time, every single marathon, whether when I was running years and years ago in another lifetime, sub-250 marathons, and whether... I just did have you ever done Mad Marathon in Vermont?
No.
Phenomenal marathon. It's in July. It's a tough one, but and it was 34 when we finished, 34 Celsius, but at 7 hours and 7 minutes, she was still there.
Wow.
And she did upset me, because she said to me, I was walking, and she said, "Why didn't you at least run across the finish line?" And I said, "Why don't you be out here for 7 hours and try to do this?" So,
yeah, but
she's there, and I'm very fortunate. Our kids and our grandchildren are supportive as well.
Yeah. And obviously, it takes that. And look, I know you still love completing marathons. I know you love being around other runners. Are there other events and there are races you do every single year, and you've done multiple times, dozens of times in some cases. Are there any new events that you've done recently that you really like?
I'm thinking, like Mad Marathon, I had done once before. I don't know if I'm doing any new ones this year, but I might do Grandfather Mountain again, which I've done 10 times, and I haven't done that. That's in July in Boone, North Carolina, and that's 4,300-foot incline, but I'm not certain if I'll do that. But I'm thinking, I don't know if I have any new ones. I do Glass City every year, and I'm an ambassador for that marathon. That's the last Sunday in April. And what was really neat about that, the race director called me last year about this time, and a great guy, Clint McCormick, and asked if I know anybody who would sing for the first time the Canadian National Anthem. And I thought about that for about a month, and then I called them back and I said my two grandsons, who are 8 and 10, would be happy to do that. So they stood on the stage in front of 4,000 runners last April and sang the Canadian National Anthem.
Wow, very cool.
So it was a treat for me. And, so I loved that marathon. And I'm trying to think.
Yeah, that's
I'm gonna
okay.
Do any new ones. I don't think so.
All right. Now, what's the closest that you've come to missing a day of running? You must have had colds and the flu and injuries and things like that, and logistics, even if you're traveling, that must have gotten in the way sometimes. Have you
logistics and colds and flu? I can run through. The closest was, I guess, 2 years ago when I didn't know what it was, and I ran with it, and even when I was diagnosed with the MRI, I still ran with it, because by then it was healing, but I had a torn medial meniscus in my right knee, and it was debilitating to the point it was hard to walk, and I would drive my car to a church parking lot about a mile from our house, and I'd run in the park, well, if you call it running, in the parking lot for 30 minutes and drive home. And one Tuesday, I put on my clothes to run. It was a cold morning, And I said to Marcia, I don't think I can do it. And she said, you're dressed already. Why don't you do it? I did it, but that was the closest I ever came to not running.
Well, here we are, almost 40 years later. Rick, congratulations on all you've done, on all of the days, all of the marathons, and enjoy these next few days leading up to this really significant milestone. Well done, and thank you for being such a great ambassador for the sport of running and for sharing your passion with so many people. Thanks for being with us today.
And I thank you because you've been so supportive, and I think you guys are great for runners, and thank you.
That's Rick Raymond of Toronto, who will celebrate 40 years of running every single day in just a few weeks. Coming up next, elite runner Sasha Gaulish takes on the people who are telling female runners what to wear. iRun Radio is brought to you in part by New Balance Canada. New Balance is a proud sponsor of the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon, fitting elite Olympic marathoners like Reed Coolset, and also making shoes that are ideal for you. You may have heard the story of Rowan University in the United States, where the women training on the track around the football field were told that they weren't wearing enough clothing. They were in their sports bras on a hot day, and apparently it was distracting to the football players. Well, that provoked a strong reaction, including from elite Canadian runner Sasha Gaulish, who wrote about it at irun.ca. Sasha, it's great to talk to you again. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks again for having me, Mark.
Before we talk about the issue at hand that you've been writing about and talking about now since it became news, how's your own running going these days?
Oh, my running's been great, aside from the weather. I'm just afraid of falling, honestly, with some of the slippery stuff, but I joined Good Life. So I can have a treadmill within walking distance and not actually have it in my home. And I've really fallen in love with running again, sort of since the letdown of Berlin.
So you've fallen in love how? Tell me what's driven that.
I really love all the different seasons for what they are. And so one of the really unique things of fall are the different colors and the different smells that come out. And as I went through sort of the transition time of not seriously training, I actually got to run with a bunch of different groups and a bunch of different friends. And I noticed every time I went out, I would come home because my cheeks were hurting from smiling so much. And it was a good reminder, not just about the community of runners, but that I have the ability to do something that really does set my soul on fire and makes me smile.
Your cheeks were hurting because you were smiling so much. That is a really good sign. That's a positive thing.
Yeah, I recommend if you're going to have one thing that really hurts from running, if it can be your cheeks, you know, it's been a good day.
Exactly. That sounds fantastic. Tell me a little bit about your experience on the treadmill, though, because I mean, at this time of year, I run on the treadmill more than I do in the summer and the spring and you know, it's kind of where I get the workout in and I get it done, but it's not something I look forward to as much as running outside. So have you adapted well to the treadmill?
No, I adapt terribly actually to the treadmill. So the first week is really challenging on my body for a whole bunch of reasons. And I'm sure other people go through this too, where, you know, you're kind of like having a game with the treadmill belt. And so my hamstrings sometimes get tight. Sometimes my quads get tight because it's I actually find it a more firm surface than running on the roads. And maybe that's just because my stride changes a bit getting on the treadmill. Last Sunday, I had a little bit of a hiccup and just rolled my ankle a little bit, and I got on the AlterG. And I find when you get on the AlterG treadmill, that really plays a number on your hamstring. So sort of this like first week of adjustment, I find really challenging. Just getting back on the treadmill. And like you said, I mean, it's one of the tools that you have to have as a Canadian. And if you want to be a runner, I mean, yes, you can put things on your shoes and do all sorts of things. But if you're trying to get a quality run in and it's really slippery outside, I mean, you are just better off to get on the treadmill.
Yeah, and it's kind of part of your repertoire, right? Or it needs to be in the winter. So for sure, yeah. So you got to do it. And when you're on the treadmill, you can, in my case, of course, my treadmill's at home, so I can wear whatever I want. So there's nobody telling me what to wear, which is what we're going to talk about now. Let's talk about this university that basically told its cross-country team what to wear because they were running on the track around the football field during football practice, and apparently that was, if they were wearing, you know, they weren't covered up enough from the perspective of the football players or maybe the coaches, that was distracting for the men's football team. What did you think when you first heard this?
Oh, I mean, like lightning bolts of anger, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's sort of the natural reaction. I mean, I did dig a little deeper and, you know, really kind of try and figure out what was going on. And I think at the end of the day, none of us were in that room when the athletic department had a meeting with the cross country coach and the football coach down at Rowan University. So one of the things we do know, and this is pretty common practice at all universities, is that ideally, only one team has use of a facility at a time. I mean, you could imagine if lacrosse and football were trying to host practice at the same time, you know, what a cluster blank it would be. And now it's different with runners, right? They're on the track. Having said, I have been hit by a football, I've been hit by a lacrosse ball and a soccer ball. Ironically, not from any of those teams practicing at U of T, but my own teammates playing with them. And it does, it stings. The football and the soccer ball to the face. Really sting. Didn't break stride.
Good for
and
you.
And so
this was not because the football team or the soccer team was practicing. It's because your running teammates were horsing around when they should have been working out.
It was more the high jumpers, but yes,
okay.
My teammates were horsing around. But, you know, I think for insurance reasons, universities are sort of pigeonholed into saying that only one team will use a facility
right.
at a time. You know, and for whatever reason, I think what happened on that day was the team was maybe going to go work out at the high school and it was locked and they were all warmed up and ready to go. And so they went over to what was their university track and something was said. Number two, and which was really challenging, and I think this isn't the one that upset me the most, but this is, you know, one of the things that was challenging. They have a spoken rule, not a written rule. They have a spoken rule that one must wear a shirt while working out. And that was non-gender specific. It was for men and women. One must wear a shirt. And according to their rules at the time, a sports bra was not a shirt. But given that it wasn't a written rule, how are you supposed to know? And the interpretation of that is then open for, you know,
yeah.
whatever anybody wants to have. The third thing, and where I really got upset after having dug deeper, was the football coach did say that it was distracting. And that's the culture that needs to go. And so if you have a leader saying to a bunch of men, you know, yeah, it is distracting when the runners are in sports bras, you know, I think that's the culture that needs to change. And I mean, enough people have said this, but like what happens when the cheerleaders are, you know, bopping around and flipping around and doing all that? Like one would argue that their outfits are far racier than a sweaty runner.
Not to mention their behavior.
Right.
Their performances, right?
Totally.
So, yeah. And I mean, obviously it's putting the onus on the distraction, the responsibility for the distraction
right.
or lack of distraction, not on the people who fall victim to the distraction, but the people who are causing it, supposedly, right? Like that's, they puts
right.
the onus of the distraction on, but well, women should stop behaving the way they behave because it distracts men.
Right.
Yeah.
Which isn't an answer. And you know, you appreciate that, and I appreciate that. And, you know, for the most part, really, most of the population appreciates that. And there's, you know, bad apple's probably the wrong term, but there's always going to be someone, you know, that says the wrong thing. And maybe the football coach didn't really mean that, but he did say it. And that was where I was disappointed in the university's answer. I mean, knowing that the football coach said what he said, the university needed to say, we don't support a culture like this. You know, we believe in, you know, in diversity and equity and equality. And further to that, women can choose to wear what they want to wear when they're doing an activity that requires you to wear an outfit like that.
Now, you went through a similar experience. You wrote about this at irun.ca. There was some reference to appropriate athletic attire when you were training at the University of Toronto, right?
Yes. And U of T actually, just first and foremost, handled it really well. So when the Gold Ring facility was built, there was a new policy that was instituted that said appropriate athletic attire. And what that was open for interpretation. What was communicated to staff was that one must wear a shirt as appropriate athletic attire when running around the track. I actually, you know, cognitive dissonance, and you shape a memory into what you wanted your memory to be. But I do remember at the time I was working full time and I was coming to practice, started to stay in shape, but I really was there for the tan. And so I would not bring a t-shirt because the whole purpose of being there was to get a suntan. And so I was trying to just run in a sports bra. And no one said anything to you in a derogatory way, but they did say the rules of the facility are that you must wear a shirt. And we did get it overturned that women could wear sports bras. And I can't remember if we helped the guys out. But I do know the rest of the summer we were sort of okay running in sports bras. But the guys weren't allowed to run topless, which was really unfair given how hot that summer was.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, sometimes these things, I guess, have good intentions behind them, but people have to be careful what they are saying out loud sometimes, right? And what they're putting in writing. Yeah. So I'm glad to see you speaking out about this. And I know it's gotten a lot of reaction and a lot of support and some very strong responses as well. Have you gotten good feedback about what you wrote?
I've gotten great feedback about what I've written, but I've also had those stories that, you know, make you cringe and make you really sad. And, you know, in particular, a woman, she's a master's runner. You know, she said, it takes a lot of courage for a woman who doesn't have a six pack and looks like your standard runner to get on a treadmill somewhere and take their top off. And when, you know, I was running on a treadmill somewhere and I took my top off and someone came over and told me that I had to put my shirt back on because I wasn't wearing appropriate running attire. And she said she's been too afraid to go back to that facility. And that breaks my heart. You know, that took real courage for that person. You know, I stand by that running is for everybody and it doesn't matter what you look like. You just run. It's amazing. And, you know, to shatter someone's courage like that, that's life changing for them. And it really spoke to me in a way that, like, we need to talk about this because it's not about, you know, your typical elite runner that looks, you know, with their washboard abs, as she said. You know, it's actually really for everybody else that has the courage to put that stuff on, given the culture that we've been raised in.
Absolutely. And you've been such a strong advocate for that for so long now, and it's very powerful. I'm really glad to hear you speaking out about this again and repeating that message and reinforcing it. I think it's a very important message and a very strong one. Sasha, thanks so much for what you do. Thank you for joining us on the show, and good luck with your running in the weeks ahead.
Thanks, Mark.
That is elite Canadian runner Sasha Gaulish. Coming up next, the Frankfurt Marathon and a special running program for people with developmental disabilities. We'll be right back. iRun Radio is brought to you in part by New Balance Canada. New Balance is a proud sponsor of the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon, fitting elite Olympic marathoners like Reed Coolset, and also making shoes that are ideal for you. Carrie Waddell recently completed the Frankfurt Marathon. She's going to tell us all about that and also a little bit about a program in Toronto she runs with, which brings out runners with developmental disabilities. Carrie, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me.
So tell us about the Frankfurt Marathon. What was that experience like?
It was a great experience. It was my first marathon that I've done outside of Canada, and my second marathon ever. So as kind of in terms of welcoming Canadians, I think it was a really fun marathon to run. It was a great flat course, lots of support along the course itself, and a pretty one-of-a-kind experience, I think.
And what is it like running a marathon outside Canada? Because I know a lot of people who are listening are probably people who have only run in Canada or the United States. And so you're running in a different country with a different language and a different culture. So how different is the marathon experience?
I think it's quite similar. I mean, I'm speaking from a very kind of recreational runner's perspective, not from kind of more of a competitor or a elite runner. But so I think it's quite similar in that kind of the way in which the event works is very similar, and kind of a lot of the support that's there. A few kind of differences, I guess, that I found was one is you really have to plan out kind of what you're going to eat the day before, especially if you're not from that area or not very familiar with kind of what sorts of food you're going to be eating, just to be a little bit careful so you don't eat anything that might offset your body in any way.
Yeah, that's good advice.
And then I had a little bit of trouble with the start line as I didn't understand German. So not speaking German and kind of understanding where exactly we were in the countdown was a little challenging. So I was almost late to the start, but that's okay. That got resolved. So not a huge problem. Otherwise, it was a lot of kind of looking up what was going to be on the course in terms of nutrition and how that compared to kind of what we would have here and things that I was used to. But it's a pretty fun experience. And I mean, getting to kind of, I don't know, rep Canadians there was very cool.
And that's one of the things that concerns me about running a marathon in another country where English is not the main language, like Germany or Tokyo or China or somewhere like that, is that, you know, there might be an important announcement and you don't get to hear it. I know in some cases they do make some of their announcements in English, but you might miss out on something, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, people around me were really, really friendly, and most, I picked a country, so speaking Germany, a lot of, most Germans speak fairly high-level English, so
sure.
That wasn't too much of a problem. You just kind of have to be okay asking people to translate for you.
Yeah, and actually, that's a great point, because Europe is such a diverse continent, and there are so many people who speak multiple languages. That's different, perhaps, than going to a place like Japan or China or somewhere where it's where the culture is a little more is a little more exclusive, I guess.
Man, I mean, it was something I was concerned about to a certain extent, especially when you're picking a race that isn't, like, for most major marathons, they will have kind of announcements done in English and signs done in English and whatnot, so that might be a little bit easier to recognize and to have that signage available, but picking one that isn't as kind of well attended and doesn't necessarily have a translation is something people should certainly think about.
And why did you pick Frankfurt?
That was sort of a story of convenience. My partner is living in the UK at the moment in London, and we actually wanted to run Amsterdam, thinking, oh wow, it would be great to kind of spend a weekend in Amsterdam, run the marathon, and stay for a little bit longer. And then work kind of got in the way, and we had to push it a week, and it was the next closest marathon, so we thought, why not?
Oh, good thinking. At least you kept at it instead of choosing not to do one. That's good.
Well, at that point, we'd both done our kind of 32 and 34 kilometer run.
Sure.
So we're pretty far into the training.
Yeah, so it was a last minute kind of thing.
Yeah.
Now, what is it about long distance running that appeals to you? Because it's not for everyone, and I think by and large people take it up when they're many people take it up when they're a little bit older. So, what is it about marathons that you like?
Sure. So, I think personally, I started kind of my introduction into sports is actually through competitive rowing. So, I rowed all through high school and university, and you get very used to kind of 2 and 3 hour long practices, and it's very in taking out a boat for a really long row, it's very similar to going out for a really long run, and that there's kind of a very you get into a very nice rhythm, you get kind of into your mind gets to drift off into a bit of a different mindset where you can kind of think through a lot of different things, and it's just, I find it's very meditative in some ways and just a really nice thing to do. And similar to rowing, I think the long distance running community and the running community in general is kind of has this nice aspect of being both an individual and a team sport in many ways. In that, I mean, if you run in downtown Toronto, you get to know kind of the other people that are running in downtown Toronto, and that's really nice. And they're kind of there cheering for you along your run and whatnot. So yeah, I think there's a lot of similarities between the two. So when I stopped rowing, it was kind of a very easy transition into running.
Very interesting. And what else do you aspire to do? Are there more marathons in your future?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly. I'm not one for short distances. I always joke that I don't think I have a fast twitch muscle in my body. So long distances are certainly more of my thing. But I think, have some work to do. This was the first marathon that I really did a lot of training for, and really, I think, learned what it meant to pace something and to start figuring out kind of a little bit more what the mindset of racing is like. And so with that, I'd really like to keep working on getting my time down and spending, kind of figuring out a race plan a little bit more. And so there's certainly a lot more things to learn and a lot more marathons to run. So.
Okay, sounds great. Now, I also understand that you run with a group in Toronto, and this is a very special group. You run with some people who are living with disabilities. Tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. So I run, there's a running store in downtown Toronto that's kind of at Bathurst and Adelaide called Black Toe Running, and they run a number of different groups. And so I'm part of their run club, which is a kind of three times a week we go out for different workouts. And then in addition to that, they've partnered with a charity that's also in downtown Toronto called Goodfoot. The charity is actually a kind of a messenger service in which they that employs individuals with developmental disabilities who act as couriers around Toronto, either on foot or via public transit. So they're kind of walking all over the city, delivering packages and papers and whatnot. And so Black Toe partnered with them to create a little bit of a run club, whereby anybody who is employed by Goodfoot is also welcome to come out once a week and to train for kind of 5 to 6 weeks before a 5K race. So in this case, Scotia, but in the spring, they also choose to run the Pride Run in Toronto. And so I was kind of helping out with about 6 or 7 other people, led by individuals at Black Toe and then a volunteer coach, just to kind of help out with a little bit of training and provide some fun and companionship while they're running around a track or down on the Martin Goodman Trail.
And what have you gotten from that experience? Tell me what it's been like running alongside some people who, from what I understand, you know, they're facing some of them are facing some pretty big challenges, but they're still out there running and enjoying it.
So for me, it's just another group of people to run with in a lot of respects. So it was really nice. I was having trouble getting out on Tuesdays to get out for my own run. So in that way, it was nice to kind of have company doing my own workouts with them. And it also gave me a little bit of experience about what it's like to kind of plan for different training for different groups, which is really interesting. And it was an opportunity to kind of meet new people and just seemed like a good way of giving back to a community that's given a lot to me.
Well, sounds great. And we're going to try to find out more about this group on a future edition of iRun Radio. Just before we let you go, Carrie, would you recommend the Frankfurt Marathon? Is there anything else you would, any other way that you would describe it for anybody who's thinking about doing that one?
I certainly would recommend it. It was a really great experience in terms of kind of a very easy, I think, marathon to kind of jump into and run. It was an extremely flat course, as I mentioned, and really well supported along the course, which is really nice. In terms of, I mean, it sort of depends, I guess, what people are looking for out of a marathon. It was quite a fast heat of athletes. So if you are looking for quite a competitive race, I think that's a really great one. Whereas I was kind of towards the back end of the group, and it was well supported there too, but certainly a little bit more sparse than the front end.
Okay, that's a great report. I'm glad you shared it with us, and congratulations on completing the Frankfurt Marathon, your second marathon. And thanks for joining us on iRun Radio. Great to talk to you, Carrie.
Great, thanks so much, Mark.
That's Carrie Waddell of Toronto. Coming up next week on iRun Radio, running track and field at the age of 90. I hope you can be with us for the next edition of iRun Radio. Thank you for listening. Have a great week.